jealous lover. You're acting so strange. Hey, jealous lover, what is making you change? Hey, jealous lover, how wrong can you be? I'm yours ever faithful.
It's been called the most destructive emotion housed in the human brain, and some view it as an essential force in small amounts that helps maintain our romantic relationships. You've probably experienced it at some time in your adult life, but new research indicates that infants and animals might feel some degree of it as well. Yes, this week's Please Explain is all about jealousy. And as always, we invite your calls with questions or thoughts on the topic at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. And joining us now to talk about the many permutations and expressions of jealousy are Dr. Maria Legersty, professor of psychology at York University, and Dr. Gordon Clanton, a sociology professor at San Diego State University. And I'm very pleased to welcome them to the show. Hi. Gordon?
I'm here.
Yeah. According to the American Heritage Dictionary, the word jealous in English derives from the late Latin zealous, the source of the word zeal. So is the emotion like zeal, a passionate pursuit of something?
Well, my research has mostly to do with that issue. I've argued that jealousy is socially useful. It may not be right in every case, but it certainly isn't wrong in every case, because jealousy, in the absence of jealousy, marriages would be much more vulnerable to betrayal and all that. So as you suggest, it's a kind of a boundary-drawing mechanism, and to a point, it's useful.
When I mean, it keeps things in check because we're aware that the other person will be jealous if we do something that crosses the line?
Sure, it's anticipatory. We anticipate that if we have an affair, it's going to be a terrible thing, and the jealousy will be the other person's discovery of the thing, and then whatever they do. But jealousy does most of its work in a preventative way, and so there's a whole lot less adultery because people know that the mate has the right to be jealous. So yeah, it's zeal and jealousy are from the same root. You've really done your homework. The other thing I think that's often overlooked is that jealousy, our first experience of jealousy in adulthood in romantic relationships, may be when we're ready for a commitment and the other person is not. So I've had a lot of people tell me that, you know, they were never jealous until they met the person who turned out to be the love of their life. And with regard to that person, they didn't want him or her sleeping with other people. So at that point, the jealousy would be the signal that I want a commitment from this person. Let's see if I'm going to get it. And then those negotiations begin. So those would be two ways. Jealousy prevents adultery in a kind of anticipatory way, and jealousy is the signal that lets us know that we care enough about another person to want a committed relationship with them.
So should we be suspicious of someone who says, I'm just never jealous?
Well, self-report is not the best way to study something like jealousy, because our selfhood is kind of caught up in our sense of ourself is related to the way we see ourselves regarding jealousy. So I think people who say they're not jealous, you know, I'm guessing they're repressing, but maybe they've just never had a relationship to protect, and that wouldn't necessarily be a good thing. In other words, you would have no jealousy if you had no relationships, particularly no romantic relationships. But that wouldn't necessarily be a good thing. I think in general our society, especially men, are urged to be stoic in their self-report about anything that could be considered a weakness. I had a cousin, actually, who punched a guy out because the fellow just asked his date to dance. And when they said to him that he was a pretty jealous guy, he said, no, I wasn't jealous, I was just pissed. So it was okay for him to be very angry, but he couldn't be jealous. But it was the same event.
Let's bring Dr. Legersty in here. Maria, some of your recent research has found that infants as young as 3 months old experience jealousy. So it isn't just about being jealous of a loved one and worrying about adultery. Under what circumstances do they feel jealous?
That's right. This is not a romantic relationship we are talking about, but we are certainly talking about the baby's fear of losing a beloved to a rival. And the reason I'm saying that is that what I showed is that when I put the baby in two identical situations, one where I'm talking to the baby and I'm interrupted by the mother, and then to the exclusion of the baby, engage the mother in a monologue. In other words, I talk and the mother just listens. The baby doesn't care. The baby doesn't mind. The baby just looks on. However, if I'm interrupted by the mother and I engage her in a dialogue where the two of us have lots of fun, we laugh loud, also to the exclusion of the baby gets very upset.
Really? And how do they express that? They start crying?
No, they don't. And this is the interesting part, because we have lots of other conditions where the babies react appropriately and differentiate between these conditions and also between those that I'm talking about. Babies, in the beginning when I saw it, I was very surprised, and then later on I confirmed these responses with other researchers. Babies vocalize intensely, they wriggle around, they take their toes, they look back and forth rapidly, so they have a very novel type of response. And remember, the experimental elicitation of jealousy is brand new.
I would have assumed that amongst babies, jealousy would also be connected to sibling rivalry.
But not at 3 months.
At 3 months, the child is unaware that he or she has a sibling?
I don't think so. I think they are aware that they have siblings, but it may not be expressed yet. And in any case, we haven't really experimented with that. Sibling rivalry is made up of jealousy, of envy, of competition, and that has primarily been studied in older infants. This is the first time we're putting it all the way back to the first year of life.
So you would probably say it's hardwired into our brains.
No. Are we saying that it is instinctual?
Well, I don't know. Is it? Would you say that this is a is this nature or nurture or a combination of both, as far as you're concerned?
We can do this in an analytical way. If we say it's hardwired, then it doesn't necessarily depend on experience or on any other cognitive abilities of the baby. And if we say that, then we have to reason away all these beautiful social competencies that we see in the first 3 months of life. Now, remember the history of jealousy. Jealousy is actually not a basic emotion. It is called a complex emotion. It presupposes that we have self-awareness, other awareness, the formation of a social bond, the ability to engage in triadic relationships, the ability to perceive thirdness, i.e. the relationship between the beloved and the rival, and so on. So it could hardly be hardwired in this case.
And, Gordon, you would agree, although I think social scientists express it in a different way, don't they view jealousy as a learned or non-innate emotion?
Well, yes, but again, a lot depends on what we want to put under the word jealousy. As Marie just suggested, it's a mixture of things. And as my earlier remarks suggested, adult jealousy in romantic relationships is not the same thing as whatever is happening at 3 months. I'm fascinated by that research, by the way. You've really got the two ends of the horn here. But my view would be that jealousy is learned in the kinds of jealousy that I study, adult romantic jealousy, is learned, and it's learned as we learn about relationships and what could threaten them and how to protect them. And all of those things have to be learned. None of those things are inborn, of course.
Well, Maria described it as a complex emotion.
I think she nailed it, yes.
What does that mean?
She mentioned it means that it's not one of the pure emotions that can that have been cataloged. Depending on who you read, there are about seven universal emotions that are related to recognizable facial expressions, independent of culture. And so jealousy is not one of those. You know, anger is one of those, and disgust is one of those, but jealousy is not one of those. It's a mixture of emotions and events, and the social bond that allows people to interact in the various ways that they do. It's only when you know the rules, presumably jealousy as we know it in marriage is probably a little different in a plural wives situation, polygamy. Mormons people in the Middle East, they'd have to have completely different rules, and that couldn't be hardwired. So yeah,
no, that's
I believe it's learned, and it's learned primarily as we move the kind I care about. Happens as we move into adolescence and have our first experiences of romantic love and loss.
Maria, have studies been done on what parts of the brain become activated when we're having a jealous response?
Well, no. When we talk about, you know, the neuroscientist, my favorite neuroscientist is Jack Panksepp. He writes a great chapter in our book. And he says that what I found, first of all, may be a precursor to jealousy. He feels that it is evidence of separation distress, which is part of the mammalian brain. But, of course, separation distress is a dyadic relationship. It's not triadic. It's not jealousy, which involves the fear of losing a loved one to someone else. So he focuses on
the dyadic would just be fear of being abandoned, of being left alone?
Yes, of the mother leaving, the distress.
Which is an aspect of jealousy.
Pardon?
It's an aspect of jealousy, but not the complete picture.
It's not the complete. It's not triadic. And he talks about, Panksepp feels that we could look at secondary indices, such as jealousy involves sadness, it involves loss, and if we look at the brain, we could look at particular, for instance, endomorph, we could look at those particular chemicals that would reduce the feeling of loss and sadness, and those are endomorphins and oxytocins, for instance. And he also says that jealousy, for instance, is not a single emotion. You cannot map it on the brain. It's made up of these seven emotions, as the other speaker just said, such as fear, anxiety, rage, anger, and so on. These are the innate emotions that are right away perceived from our face and our behavior, and I call it the universal emotion.
And some people experience it more than others. There are some people who get insanely jealous, others
Miss Novak.
many people feel jealous when they even think about their current romantic partner with someone else. So this is really as much a matter of perception as anything else.
No, it's also a matter of socialization.
In other
it is how we are taught to learn to deal with particular events that we engage in the environment.
Gordon, you want to jump in on that?
I'm fascinated. Thank you. This is wonderful. I agree with pretty much everything you said, and I guess I thought coming in that since you were kind of in the, at the early stages of life and the biochemistry of it all, that we might disagree more, but she's right. I mean, we probably won't find jealousy. We probably won't find a pill for it. We won't find a location for it in the brain. We won't find a pill for it because it's related to this web of things that we've learned that mm-hmm. make us who we are. Also, the observation about threeness is important. An early sociologist named Simmel, S-I-M-M-E-L, wrote about this. He wrote how a dyad is different from a triad, and those dynamics are there even whether romance is involved or not. The presence of the third person transforms everything. When there are only two of you, for example, one of you leaves and there's nobody left, there's no discussion left. But with three, someone can leave, someone can be left out, someone can get only part of the story. That's a very important dynamic.
Recently, Dr. David Buss of the University of Texas wrote in the Los Angeles Times that jealousy reminds us that we possess an ancient brain designed for a world long forgotten. Would you agree with that? This sounds like a very different take than what either of you have been describing.
No, that's in Marie's court, I think. You start, Marie.
No, I don't know whether I understand that.
Jealousy reminds us that we possess an ancient brain designed for a world long forgotten.
Well, I understand the part of the ancient brain, because that would be Jack Panksepp's, also the ancient mammalian brain, where we have the formation of a social bond and the sadness and fear of the loss of the social bond, which you find in animals as well. But a world long forgotten. Why a world long forgotten?
I don't know. It sounds very poetic.
Why jealousy more than other things?
But you're suggesting that other animals also experience jealousy. Other mammals?
Well, we have another chapter in the book by Scott Forrest from the University of Manitoba, and he certainly talks about sibling rivalry. It's fascinating research. I'll quote you what he writes. He writes, "Families, animal families, are venues for extremes of violence of selfishness. Baby eaglets and pelicans murder siblings with ruthless efficiency. Shark embryos slaughter brothers and sisters in utero. And spadefoot toad tadpoles cannibalize siblings when their pond dries too quickly, developing huge predatory claws to accomplish this task." Now, this behavior, of course, you could find this is a type of jealousy, but it is, of course, jealousy about you having too much food, shelter, or warmth, and so on.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with more. I'm talking with Dr. Maria Legersteeg. She's a professor of psychology at York University. Her book, Jealousy, Theories, Principles, and Multidisciplinary Approaches. Also with us is Dr. Gordon Clanton, a sociology professor who's studied jealousy mostly in love relationships at San Diego State University. We will come back with your calls to 212-433-9692 in just a little while.
Oh, how wrong can you be? Oh, to fall in love was my very first mistake. How was I to know I was far too much in love?
Your cheating heart will make you weep. You'll cry and cry and try to sleep, but sleep won't come.
We're back with Please Explain, and my guests, Dr. Gordon Clanton, sociology professor at San Diego State University and author of a book called Jealousy, and Dr. Maria Legersteeg, professor of psychology at York University. She also has a book on jealousy. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-WNYC. Before we get to the calls, a number of listeners have wondered whether there are similarities between jealousy, resentment, and envy. Are they all part of the same general area of emotion?
They can be mixed together, but unfortunately they're too mixed together in ordinary language. It's fairly easy to explain the difference between jealousy and envy, and it's useful. Jealousy, as we've been discussing, it involves three people. One may be imaginary, of course, but three people, whereas envy is simply a feeling that comes out of a comparison between two individuals. Envy is the hostility that the inferior may feel toward the superior in a comparison. So they're completely different, except, of course, that in the dynamics of relationships, they can be mixed together, but structurally, they're quite different.
So,
envy, in other words, is not the wish for what the other person has. That's the common view. Envy is the wish that the other should lose it, whether you get it or not. So it's a very dark emotion. And envy, for example, is forbidden in the Ten Commandments and in every other moral teaching that I'm aware of, and jealousy is not. So they're clearly different.
But although jealousy can lead to pretty dark things, because some people get jealous to the point of committing violent acts.
But that wouldn't have anything to do with envy. That'd be my point. That would happen over there in that triangle, which is properly called jealousy. The confusion arises because envy is so dark that we mislabel it, and jealousy is one of the things we call envy. But if I were to give you some examples now, you could easily tell, you know, when Tony Gwynn retired, someone said some of the other players were jealous of his big salary and his celebrity. Well, you can't be jealous of salary and celebrity. You can be envious about that, but not jealous. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So in ordinary speech, the word jealousy is used for jealousy and for envy, and it's confusing to people.
Do you want to add to that, Maria, or should we go to some calls?
No, I totally agree. Jealousy, your envy, I usually say it more simple. Envy is usually it's dyadic. You may envy the fact that I have blonde hair, but jealousy is, again, the fear of losing a beloved to someone else. So it adds this dyadic function to it.
Hank from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Well, I have two questions now. One is in response to what was just said, where my understanding, at least from a linguistic, if not from a sociological, psychological point of view, is that envy, the jealousy, is wishing that one had something that somebody else has, which can be obviously in a dyadic relationship, and envy is the resentment of that person or the wish that they didn't have it. So I'm curious about that.
So that what both Gord and I just said, that should have changed your mind now, did it?
Well, that's what I'm questioning. That linguistically, I was taught that the issue of dyadic or triadic wasn't necessary. That the issue that jealousy and envy could both be present in dyadic relationships.
You could be envious of your mate if I often hear this one. My husband gets to travel to Hawaii on business, and I don't get to go with him, and I sort of have to control my envy. I have to, as a part of my obligation in our relationship, I have to talk myself out of that. I don't hate him because of that, and I wouldn't want him to not get to go. And so we have an inner dialogue, and that's true with other negative emotions, that we kind of talk ourselves through them and around them.
Right. I agree. But just taking your example there, the same person, if they were jealous, could be doing things to try to sabotage their husband's going to Hawaii because they don't want the husband to go if they can't go.
You're writing a film script here, Hank. What's your other question?
You didn't like that one, huh?
No. What's the other question?
All right. The other one was questioning your gentleman's guest, who essentially was suggesting that either one is jealous or not in or capable of a meaning intimate relationship. That his example of his cousin obviously is somebody who's denying jealousy, but what about somebody who's secure in the relationship, in himself, in his partner, and doesn't mind his partner dancing with another person if he or she wants to?
Well, I chose a fairly extreme example, and of course you're asking us to allow for the possibility of people who are completely secure and trusting in their relationship, and they know they will never have any reason to be jealous, and that's certainly true, and that kind of life experience is probably beneficial. But in our society, with a whole lot of people, for example, these days most people have had sex with more than one person when they get married. In an earlier time, they had not. The divorce rate, of course, went up a lot in the 60s and 70s and leveled off pretty high for the last 30 years. So all of those things mean that a whole lot of people are in relationships that are not secure. But yes, I've often thought of my oldest aunts and uncles. You know, I'm sure none of them ever fooled around, and so they probably were largely without jealousy because they were unable to imagine any sort of betrayal of the sort that jealousy would bring up.
Jonathan from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I wanted to make a comment just to expand upon what's been said by your guests. I'm a psychotherapist, and from our point of view of doing psychotherapy with people, it's an accomplishment to get to the point where you can be jealous. It means that you have enough sense of self and self-awareness that you can see that other people are like you, that they're the center of their worlds. And it's possible, say, for mom and dad to do something, and sex becomes like the most dramatic example, but doesn't have to be that, that doesn't involve you. They don't need you. And that ability to be worried about that is an accomplishment, a developmental accomplishment. And it takes place usually sometime around the so-called Oedipal years, because that's when children, children have that, usually start having that ability, and it's a way of thinking about that developmental period without the gender, you know, like the Freudian gender specific roles that we usually think of when we think of the Oedipal period, but just think of it in terms of triangles and being able to be aware of those kinds of dynamics.
I find that very useful. I was interviewed once by someone on radio, and while we were off air, he was boasting that he had never been jealous and would never be jealous, and he clearly saw it as a mark of his wonderfulness that he was not jealous and knew he wouldn't ever be. And I just said, what if you were involved with a woman romantically and, you know, there was some ambiguous moment with a third party? And he said, I'd drop the bitch. Now, from this, I learned that a lot of people want so much not to be jealous that they will, in my view, withdraw from relationship or sabotage relationship because they don't want the pain. So the doctor who's calling in is saying that the ability to feel certain kinds of pain is sort of necessary for a healthy self.
What about you, Maria?
Well, I'm listening to adult jealousy. I'm listening to romantic relationships. I am listening to cases that are rather pathological, negative. What we do, of course, is we study the babies. And when I say the baby's fear of losing a beloved, the love relationship with the mother is absolutely not a Freudian one. It is simply a close bond that the baby has developed and becomes attached to. There is no romantic relationship here, and so the baby is not fearful of losing the love object, as Freud would have called it.
Well, we have a caller who actually wants to address those issues specifically.
Okay.
Sema from Manhattan.
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you. Listening to you, and I don't know if it was mentioned at all, because I noticed that Maria does go back to the infancy, and just to dispel these dark emotions that people have of envy and jealousy, I wanted to add that it does originate, I'm also a psychotherapist, that it does originate in infancy. And there was a study done in Argentina with nursing mothers who, on the 40th day of the nursing, resumed relations with their husbands, and the infant then rejected the milk, and jealousy was first traced in that study.
So this is the new technique for weaning children?
40 days is a little bit short if you're breastfeeding.
No.
But to expand upon what Maria's been saying, the Melanie Klein, a psychoanalyst from England, of course, traced envy to the mother, the dyadic relationship with the mother, being hungry or not getting the breast at the right time increases the rage in the child, and the birth of envy takes place. And so I wanted to add those two.
Thank
early
you for calling
developmental.
Us. You want to add to that, Maria?
You're welcome. This milk thing is not anything new. St. Augustine, in his Confessions book, written in 397 Antis Deus, talked about infant jealousy over a nurse's milk as proof of the sinfulness of the newborn infant. attributing far too much. But Darwin would talk about his son Doddy, who was jealous if Darwin caressed Doddy's doll. And he felt that type of jealousy was a positive emotion. Now, the most interesting of all anecdotal reports, of course, is by the famous Arnold Gazell, who wrote about jealousy as a normative response. And as the opposite of the love bond that the baby, but a love bond, a healthy love bond, the security, the attachment that the baby felt for the mother, and that it was normal to be fearful that this bond may be interrupted. And I think this is what we need to show, and this is why the handbook of jealousy that I'm publishing with Sybil Hart began, because we had plenty of books out there that talked about jealousies, the pathologies, the negative consequences, the rivalries, rather than looking at the onset of jealousy as a normative response in early development.
Thank you so much for your call. Jim from Union City, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. In the triadic realm, it was envy that prompted Iago and wanting to deprive Othello of Desdemona, but apparently that would not be jealousy, that he didn't lust after her.
Well, in that case, you've got them both. You see, Othello is prone to jealousy, and Iago is envious of Othello, and he does his harm to Othello by taking advantage of his jealousy. So they're both there. I have a definition of jealousy which I think covers all this territory. What if jealousy is a protective reaction to a perceived threat to a valued relationship? Now, the valued relationship could be marriage, and the threat could be adultery, and the threat of adultery by a third party. But these early attachments of every sort and the possibility of their interruption, it would also be true there. Jealousy would be, whatever we're going to call jealousy, is usually some sort of protective or defensive reaction on the part of a person in the face of the perceived threat of loss of the bond by virtue of some third party's intervention. Anyway, it just seems to me it's all that. It's all protection of valued bonds. And then as we grow up, of course, we know a lot more about a lot more kinds of bonds, and we could be jealous in a same-sex platonic friendship and so on by the same definition.
We're talking about jealousy on today's Please Explain with Dr. Gordon Clanton, who's a sociology professor, and Dr. Maria Legaste, who's a professor of psychology. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. A listener wonders why some people are more jealous than others. Is this something? Is this the way they were brought up? Is this is it strictly nurture? Do either of you want to answer?
It again. Here we are talking about the a more mature form of jealousy. I presume it may have to do with the self-concept of the person. It may have to do with past relationships in which the person was disappointed, lost loved ones. And there are a variety of factors that could play into that. The excessive type of jealousy the professor who works at Rutgers, she would point to the brain and the amygdala that provokes aggression in jealousy, and actually the finding that there is so much variability in jealousy would argue against that, and I find that a good example. But I would say socialization and past experiences that introduce these variabilities in the expression and feeling of jealousy.
And Gordon, I guess you would agree.
I agree, and on this one again, I'm not saying that a psychoanalytic approach couldn't be helpful. It just seems to me that in the normal life course, we learn to attach and we learn about competition and threat in such relationships, and I believe socialization. I do believe that it has to do with one's more general mental health. That's why very often you'll hear people say, oh, a jealous person, well, that's a chronically insecure person. Well, not if you come home and find your mate in bed with someone else. It's not your insecurity that's producing the jealousy in that situation.
What about when it's a pet, for example? A dog can appear to be jealous if you're not paying attention to it. I had a dog who used to jump up and grab my leg regularly whenever I danced with somebody, and it seemed to me like he was saying, "You've cut me out of this relationship."
Well,
yes,
certainly
but you're also the provider of food, and the dog knows that very well. And so this may be.
Was it? It wasn't even dinner time.
It doesn't matter. When you walk in, my dog did the same. I had a lovely. Oh, I forget what the white. What's the dog that comes from the north of Canada? But in any case,
a husky.
Pardon?
A husky?
No. It's they also use it for the blind. And he was lovely. You walked into the door, and the first thing he looked at were your hands, where you usually have his treats. So dogs are very focused on food and the things that you provide to them.
Danny, go ahead.
I've had people tell me, my cats are jealous of each other. That proves it's inborn. That proves I can't do anything about it. Something like that. But of course, that doesn't prove that it's inborn. Those animals, of course, a protective reaction to a perceived threat to a valued relationship. So the cat can feel you're giving too much attention to the other cat. I just don't think that has very much to do with us, because by the time we're having the jealousies that we're conscious of, obviously we've got a lot more going on cognitively, and we've got a much more complex social world to negotiate than the cat.
Danny,
Absolutely.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I got jealous of all your listeners who got the New Yorker subscriptions and the tote bags, and it cost me now $10 a month.
Thank you, but that would be envy. Thank you for helping us with that.
I have a brief comment and a brief question. Just a comment to Gordon, linguistically, that in Hebrew, especially biblical Hebrew, the word for jealous and zealous is the same, kinah. For example, It comes up in the story of Pinchas, who killed Zimri and Cosby, creating the world's first shish kebab, if you remember that biblical story. And the word is kinah, and it's interesting how you also trace that similarly in the evolution of English through its Latin origins. My question to the blonde professor Maria is your fascinating experiment with the babies. Mm-hmm. My question is, have you also tried two adults engaging in a conversation in front of the baby where one of the adults was not the mother? Because I remember when I had a little baby at home and we were reading books on developmental phases of the child, that there was also when the child saw certain stimulating demonstrations of adulthood in front of them, of someone playing music, people engaging in conversation, they also display certain expressions of frustration in themselves, attempting to mimic that. Or similarly to if I was at a table and two people were joking to each other in Chinese, or two British people joking to each other in British humor, which I don't understand. So,
So what is your response?
I would have to look at the responses. You know, these are all empirical questions. I would have to see the baby. It's a good idea. I should probably add a session, the research goes on, where the baby is also confronted with two strangers, where one supposes the baby does not have a loved relation or beloved. There's another beloved there. It's a very good idea.
And a listener wonders, what if the mother is talking on a cell phone?
I've had that too. Mother's talking on the cell phone, and the baby's getting upset. I have tapes of that. Mother is saying that she thinks the baby is jealous because when I talk to my husband on the phone, he is doing similar things. So the baby then imagines that she is talking to someone else, is having fun, and the possibility could arise that mother is preferring someone over the baby.
We have to leave it there, and we thank you so much, both of you, for participating in today's Please Explain. Dr. Maria Legaste, professor of psychology at York University, Dr. Gordon Clanton, professor of sociology at San Diego State University. They've both written books about jealousy, and they both seem to agree, even though they come out of different disciplines. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on during Pledge Break.
That's nice.